that poverty increased quite a bit from 2010 to 2011, and 2011 is the most recent year for which statistics are available. Over the course of the recession, you kind of would assume that poverty would be increasing, but since the recession ended in mid-2009, one might expect that poverty would maybe go down or at least taper off. But we've seen actually quite a bit of increase in the state and in local communities since the recession ended in 2009, when the poverty rate was 13.3%. And in 2011, we're up to 15% of the state's population is in poverty. And in many of the communities and counties around the state, it's much higher, and we've seen increases there as well.
I noticed that Kohl's is on the watch list. Vermilion is on the warning list. What's the difference between those lists and the simple data on poverty?
So for the watch and warning list, we take a look at four different indicators. We look at poverty rates, we look at high school graduation rates, unemployment rates, and teen birth rates. We're kind of looking at these other factors that we know impact poverty. So the watch warning lists are more comprehensive. Now, the difference between looking at the watch list and the warning list is just a matter of how counties are scored. And counties get points if their rate on any one of those four indicators is worse than the state's rate. And they also get a point if they've worsened since the previous year. But I should say that just because a county's not on the watch or warning list doesn't mean that things are fine there. And because, you know, as is the case with some of these counties in your listening area, they might have really high poverty rates, or perhaps there's a really high teen birth rate, but some of the other indicators either aren't as high or haven't gotten worse over the course of the last year, and those things kind of factor each other out and they don't end up on a list.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because Champaign County, which is very high strictly for poverty, is not on the list, and I'm just trying to figure out what the difference is. What indicators are more positive in some areas that would keep it off one of those lists?
One of the questions that I often get about Champaign is, well, you know, our poverty rate's probably really high because of all the college students here. If we take out the people there that are of traditional college age, so, you know, 18 to 24 years old, say, you still see really high rates of poverty among children, really high rates of poverty among seniors, and high rates, you know, in areas outside of the city proper and outside of that metro area. And so poverty is not just driven by college students in these college towns. There's certainly a lot more going on there that we need to be looking at.
I'm looking now at the counties and watch and warning, and also thinking of the poverty list. The counties in our area, the ones that seem to be showing up in one area or the other, Vermilion and Macon are both home to what you might call Rust Belt cities, cities which are built on industry but don't have as much as they used to. Do any of those factors play a role in their rankings?
The driving forces behind poverty are the same anywhere you go, or they have kind of similar themes. And those really are about economic forces, what economic forces are at play. And so one of the driving, you know, factors behind poverty is unemployment. For every 1 percentage point increase in unemployment, poverty goes up by 0.5 percentage point. But it's not just about lack of jobs, it's about quality of jobs. And so when we're looking at communities that perhaps were, you know, big manufacturing hubs before, and we've seen those jobs kind of diminish and some of those companies leave town, and you think about the jobs that are replacing those jobs that have kind of cropped up in their place, very often they're jobs that aren't paying as much as the jobs that were there before. People who are getting those jobs can no longer make a family-sustaining wage. They're more service-based. And so there's a job quality issue and a wage quality issue that drives poverty, in addition to just the mere existence or absence of jobs.
Amy Terpstra, Associate Director of the Social Impact Research Center at the Heartland Alliance in Chicago. She spoke with Jim Meadows about the center's annual study on poverty in Illinois. You'll find a link to their report on our website, will.illinois.edu. And now on to football. If you follow college sports, you probably know about Manti Te'o. The Notre Dame linebacker has become notorious in the last few years for his hard-hitting play and was the runner-up for the 2012 Heisman Trophy, the most prestigious award in the game. Te'o gained special media attention last year because of his personal story. Not only was he playing like an elite athlete, but he endured some horrible tragedies, the death of his grandmother and his girlfriend in the space of 24 hours. Or at least, that was the media narrative about Te'o. After some digging, the website Deadspin found out that Te'o's late girlfriend may have never existed at all. NPR's Mike Pesca spoke with Morning Edition host Steve Inskeep earlier today, and he found that with this story, there are no easy answers.
Well, the latest news that we have, and this is based on a statement that Manti Te'o released and a press conference that was given by the athletic director of Notre Dame, is he believed he had a girlfriend, although he never met her. It was an online relationship, and he was scammed or hoaxed. Now, there are a couple complications to this story, such as in the beginning of reporting this story, Manti Te'o's father, Brian, was quoted in the South Bend Tribune as talking about details of their meeting, saying their eyes locked across the field when Manti Te'o was at Stanford, where Linnae Kukua supposedly was an undergraduate, and they held hands, and details that would indicate that they met in person. But it is possible that Manti Te'o's father heard this from Manti and told the story secondhand, or perhaps it's also possible that at some point Manti realized what was going on and there was a conflation of events, although the official story is that Manti Te'o believed that he had a girlfriend who died during the season. He played for her. He sent roses to her for her funeral. And then just weeks ago, he got a call from her number and from someone claiming to be her, and he got very upset, and he told Notre Dame officials about it, and they investigated. It was only in the last few weeks that he realized what was going on.
All right, so just to be clear, you and I are pronouncing the girlfriend's name a little differently. There's really no one we can check on that with, because no such person exists. Weren't there pictures of her on Facebook?
Yes, and this sort of points the finger at, well, Deadspin, who broke the story, and we should credit them almost entirely with this, talked to a woman whose picture it was, apparently. They didn't name her. She requested anonymity. She was appalled. She had no real connection. Well, she actually does have a little bit of a connection to the person who supposedly was behind the story, but they were using pictures of another person. But there were no pictures of Manti and the girlfriend ever pictured together, which was another interesting aspect to this. And something that none of the media actually ever followed up on.
Which is another thing, just a reminder of how much gets out there without being checked by people whose job it is to do that. But how does this affect Manti Te'o, that he's now connected to this bizarre hoax? He's made all these statements that, wittingly or not, were false.
Yeah, this is somewhere between an extremely curious and possibly tragic story. Although when you think about it, one aspect of the tragedy that she supposedly died, well, I guess if it's all a story, that never happened. But, you know, how it affects him in terms of his draft status, and that's the bottom line, he's going to be in the NFL. He was projected as going as a first round, maybe a mid first round or early first round pick. Some GMs have been quoted, sometimes anonymously, saying this could affect his status. We have to worry about him. But I think that might be overblown. If when they talk to Manti Te'o, they get a decent explanation that he really was the victim and is perhaps gullible. Compare to people who get drafted into the NFL, people who have assaulted their girlfriends and done terrible things. I don't think being gullible disqualifies you from being in the NFL, if that indeed is the entirety of his story.
Maybe better to have an imaginary girlfriend. Mike, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
That was Morning Edition host Steve Inskeep speaking with reporter Mike Pesca earlier today. For ongoing details about this bizarre story, check the NPR website.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons at 1 on AM 580.
And here is the writer's almanac for Thursday. It's the 17th of January, 2013. The 18th Amendment, Prohibition, took effect on this date in 1920, which made it illegal to make, to sell, or to transport beer, wine, or other intoxicating liquors. The 18th Amendment, which in due course was reversed by the 21st Amendment, the first and only time a constitutional amendment has been repealed. It's the birthday of Benjamin Franklin, born Boston, 1706, printer, scientist, inventor, writer, founding father, and the founder of America's first lending library, who wrote in his autobiography of 1794, that writing well became of great use to me in the course of my life and was a principal means of my advancement. It's the birthday of the youngest of the Bronte sisters, Anne Bronte, born in Thornton, Yorkshire, 1820. She was a shy young woman, especially close to her sister, Emily. They made up stories together. When she was 19, she took a job as a governess and 6 years later returned home and began writing. Her first novel, Agnes Grey, sold pretty well in 1847, and her second, The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, 1848, was a big hit. Within the next year, three of the four Bronte siblings, Emily, Anne, and their brother Branwell, died of tuberculosis. Anne was the last of the three to die, and as she died, she whispered to her sister Charlotte, "Take courage." It's the birthday of the poet William Stafford, born Hutchinson, Kansas, 1914, author of many books of poems, a conscientious objector during the Second World War. He was interned as a pacifist in civilian public service camps, Arkansas, California, fighting fires, building roads. He wrote about it in his memoir, Down in My Heart. And it's the birthday of Michelle Obama, born Michelle Robinson in Chicago, 1964, grew up on the south side of Chicago. Her father worked for the city water plant. She skipped the second grade, went to the first magnet high school in Chicago, ranked second in her graduating class, went off to Princeton, then to law school at Harvard, and met Barack Obama at the law firm in Chicago, where they both worked. Here's a poem for today by Norman McCaig, entitled Praise of a Collie. She was a small dog, neat and fluid. Even her conversation was tiny. She greeted you with bow, never bow-wow. Her sons stood monumentally over her, but did what she told them. Each grew grizzled till it seemed he was his own mother's grandfather. Once, gathering sheep on a showery day, I remarked how dry she was. Polakan said, "I would take a very accurate drop to hit Lassie." And her tact and tactics, when the sheep bolted in an unforeseen direction, over the skyline came who but Lassie, and not even panting. She sailed in the dinghy like a proper sea dog. Where's a burn? She's first on the other side. She flowed through fences like a piece of black wind. But suddenly she was old and sick and crippled. I grieved for Polakin when he took her for a stroll and put his gun to the back of her head. Praise of a Collie by Norman McCaig.